This podcast is for entertainment purposes only and does not replace your own financial, tax, legal, or financial product advice.
Welcome to My Millennial Property with John Pidgeon and Emily Wallace, as always.
Now, John, before we get cracking today's episode, which I am rather excited about because I love hearing stories. I think everybody loves a good story and a good journey. But before we do get into that, I just wanted to flag, after you've listened to this episode, so don't stop now, keep listening, but afterwards, episode number 333, if you're Irish, have fun saying that. If I can say that, actually.
How would Richie Beno say that?
333.
Now, the reason I want to draw your attention to this episode is because a lot of people have been asking us recently around fixed versus variable rates, and we have addressed this question with a mortgage broker in that episode. So if that's something that sort of pricks your ears and you're interested to hear more about it, once you finish this episode, jump back into 333. It'll be there for you to listen to.
Yes, very good. All right, let's get into it. So I've got one of our strong, avid listeners coming on to the show today, Emily, and Matt Frawley is his name. And for those that follow NRL, he may be a common household name. He's been playing with the Canberra Raiders of late, and they've just been knocked out of the finals, so he's probably in deep depression at the moment. But welcome, Matt.
Yeah, thanks, John. Thanks, Emily, for having me. Obviously, as you said, I'm a big listener. I'm definitely not a household name, but I'll take it when I can get it. So, yeah, no, looking forward to having a chat.
Awesome. So, yeah, we'll go back to how it all started out for you in the NRL space, I suppose. But just tell us, just now, just gone, you've been in Queensland in a hub, is that right? And you've just got beaten on the weekend, and now you've returned to where you generally live, and that's Canberra.
Yeah, that's right, mate. Yeah, so we had to move up there. I think it's nearly 2 months ago to Queensland. We were based on the Gold Coast, obviously, with COVID and the effect it had on the Sydney clubs, especially. The NRL decided to move up there. So, yeah, it's been a bit of a blur the last 2 months, to be honest, living in a hub. We had to quarantine for a little while there, and yeah, it was a bit of a different experience, but something that everyone had to do to keep the comp running, obviously. It would have been nice for us to make the finals and go a little bit further, but back here in Canberra now and back into lockdown. So as you said, it's a bit colder, it's a bit more depressing, but I am happy to be home.
Now, before we get into a bit more of where you are now, Matt, I'm certainly keen to hear a bit more of your backstory of, I guess what conversations around money and property were like for you growing up and the foundations of that. So have you always been in Canberra? What was life like for you growing up?
Yeah. So I grew up in Canberra. I've been lucky enough to grow up in a family where we had a business that has been around for a fairly long time in Canberra, a shoe business, FSW. I'll give him a shout out that my dad and runs with his cousin and his brother at the time. So I was pretty lucky in that sense to grow up with dad being in business and learning about how he sort of run the business and grew it. I worked for him when I was young. I think I sort of probably started there. We all started as kids in the warehouse unpacking shoes and delivering them to the stores, and then also worked in the stores as well when I was in, before I started playing footy professionally when I was a little bit younger. So I had a really good grounding with all that sort of stuff, sort of seeing the highs and lows of business. And yeah, I think it sort of set me up to have a good perspective about money and hard work and all those values that are important.
Mm. It's interesting, isn't it, Emily? And we talk about this a bit, like what was your money story growing up? And I ask you, Matt, is it something where, like, being involved in a business and a family business at that, where you're a little cog in the wheel and mum and dad are running the front end side of the business, you're just turning up and hopefully getting a few dollars in your pocket and then leaving again to support the family. But were you told about money? Was it a common conversation about how business is tracking, or was it just you learning as a byproduct of being around them in the warehouse?
I think it's probably the latter, John. I think just being around it, you sort of get a, you know, an understanding. Dad was really, really good. Taught us plenty of lessons, from a young age, but there wasn't too many real direct conversations about, you know, how the business was going or how the family was going financially. I think as the business grew, you know, we were afforded, you know, really awesome opportunities to go to a nice school and, you know, go on a few nice holidays and everything. But we definitely had perspective and had we really appreciated those things, I suppose, as kids that were drummed into us from a young age. So, yeah, there wasn't really many direct conversations, but I think just being around it was, we learned some really important lessons from it.
And how about, I guess, on the side of property? Because for some people, like for some of our listeners, they've been saving since the day they could because their aspiration is to save and have a deposit for their home. For others, that might be a bit later in life. For some, it's not on their radar at all. But for yourself, how did a property sort of come into the picture for you heading into more of your adult years?
Yeah, I think being around the business family, I think, you know, the family was more you know, mum and dad weren't really property investors or anything like that. I think most of the, you know, the time and effort and the money was in the business. So I probably didn't get a passion or more of an insight about property until I moved to Sydney and a few of the boys that I was playing with at the Bulldogs at the time and a few of my really good mates now, they all invested in property and they did really well out of property. So that sort of got me thinking about it. And obviously as your career progresses and you start to make, you know, a little bit more money and, you look to ways to grow some wealth and to put things in place for the future. Property is sort of that natural progression. So, it was probably some mates at the Bulldogs that first got me into it, and then I'm sort of trying to grow my passion from there.
And Matt, you mentioned that you went away to start, or you showed some obvious talent when you were a kid playing NRL. How old were you when you, moved away from the family home and started pursuing that that career?
Yeah, so I it sort of works in the NRL. You play your under-20s with an NRL club, and I played my NRL my under-20s, in Canberra, so I didn't have to move for that. I was lucky enough to play 20s in Canberra, and then after my 20s, my under-20s career, I got picked up from the Bulldogs. So I signed to go up there when I was 19. So I left Canberra at 19 and moved up to Sydney. Yeah, that was a big thing for me and the family. Obviously, I'd never lived away from Canberra. All my mates and all my family were in Canberra, so I didn't know anyone in Sydney, and except for an auntie that I lived with, when I first moved up there, which was a massive help. But that was definitely a big move. Moving away from the family environment and something I probably struggled with a little bit naturally. You get a bit homesick, but I spent 4 years in Sydney and that was, you know, some of the best times of my life, and obviously progressed my career footy-wise and learnt plenty about myself and about the world living away from home.
What do you think was sort of the biggest challenge at that time? I know you mentioned you were living with an auntie maybe to begin with, but John and I, it's probably at the forefront of my mind because we just have recently been talking about that step into renting and moving out of home really entering almost like the next phase of adulthood of responsibility. What sort of challenges were the hardest for you in that period?
Probably not being able to cook or clean for myself is probably one thing. I was lucky enough for that. Probably, I think I was with my auntie for 2 or 3 months, which was a massive hand. That was sort of a good transition. But then I moved in with two of my mates who I played with the Bulldogs, who are, you know, two of my best mates now. We lived together for a couple of years, and I suppose it was just a big change. I went from, you know, playing under 20s, which is still just a part time sort of, you know, not, I suppose it is serious, but it's not too serious, into full-time training and playing as a trainer, as a professional, trying to, you know, live away from home. Was sort of all just happened at once, and I suppose it can get a little bit overwhelming, but, you know, it definitely helped me grow as a person, as a player, and, you know, I look back on those days with, you know, really good memories, and I wouldn't have had it any other way.
So a few years into living in Sydney, your income's obviously started to increase. Talk to us about when you thought you were in a position where you could maybe buy a property and what your knowledge level was like at that time and maybe who you called upon for help there.
Yeah. Well, my first couple of years, so I had 4 years at the Bulldogs, and my first 2 years I was in the NRL squad, but I wasn't playing NRL, so I was young, and I was playing New South Wales Cup, which is, you know, the reserve grade equivalent. I was earning okay money, but not great money. It probably wasn't until my first full year in the NRL when I debuted. I debuted sort of early on in the year, and the way a standard sort of NRL deal is worked is if you're a young up and coming player, you get match payments for every NRL game you play. So I think at the time, pretty sure it's the same at the moment. It's $3,000. I think it's $3,000 a game. So it's pretty good money, and I ended up playing, I think 15, 16 games. So that sort of gave me a massive kickstart into saving a deposit and sort of put me in a position to look for a place. So yeah, naturally I sort of wanted to get something back home because I knew a bit more about it. And yeah, sort of, you know, mum and dad helped me a bit and I did my own little research. Looking back on it now, I didn't really know what I was doing. But yeah, it's worked out okay. And that's how I sort of secured my first place.
That's awesome. I mean, to have a kickstart, first of all, because that's probably the hardest part for a lot of people, is trying to work towards that deposit. And I guess, you know, good reflections as well in terms of things you might have done differently. But is that property purely an investment property for you?
It was. Yeah, it was. I'm actually currently living in it at the moment.
Oh.
So, yeah, it's worked out well, really. I didn't really know if I'd come back to Canberra or not to play footy. I sort of thought long term after footy I'd come back, but I didn't think, you know, you sort of don't know where you're going to end up footy wise. It's a bit of a lottery sometimes. So yeah, it's worked out perfectly in terms of when I did move from Sydney. I moved overseas for a year and played in England, and then for a year, and then come back to Canberra, and I lived with mum and dad and my partner for a couple of months, just to wait until this place sort of stopped getting rented out, and I moved in it as soon as we the tenancy was up, and yeah, it's worked out well.
So talk to us about, and you may or may not remember this, but talk to us about that time where you said, okay, now enough's enough for a deposit. Now I'll go and talk to a broker, or just go straight to a lender, and this is how much I could borrow, and this is what I'm going to buy. Like, how did that all start to piece together for you? Because I think a lot of listeners are in that similar position where they're building a deposit and sometimes they don't know when enough's enough, or when we start having conversations with people that will need in our corner going forward.
Yeah, I think my first conversation was with my accountant at the time. He still is my accountant. He was really good in terms of putting me onto a mortgage broker, and I engaged with my mortgage broker, and he sort of gave me a bit more of an indication of what I could borrow and what I could afford to repay with my mortgage. And then the process of finding a place, I sort of didn't have a great deal of thought with it in terms of what I know now, but I sort of just tried to look for a nice area in Canberra that I thought had potential to grow, and yeah, that's it, where I landed. It was pretty straightforward.
Yeah, okay. And look, that's a really common one, isn't it, Emily? Is people say, this is what I can afford, this is where I think I should be buying because I know it. Let's just pull the trigger and see what happens.
Very common, particularly for a first purchase. And probably, you know, the next common thing to that is people saying, oh, you know, because my first one, I wasn't too sure. I went with what I knew, which is understandable. I get it. And I think at the end of the day, there's always reflections and things like that. But hopefully from one experience, you learn for the next. And, you know, maybe the next time around you get more assistance, or you might put some more backing behind research, particularly for investment, or you might have more of a team members on board to help you out. So it's all learning. And I'm sure there's plenty of listeners that can relate to that and probably nodding their heads going, yep, I was the same when I bought my first as well.
Yeah, totally. So Matt, fast forward to today. We either think we're rock stars and we bought well and we've made a heap of dough, and I know the Canberra market's been pretty favourable in the last few years. So looking back on it, how has it performed and would you have changed anything going forward?
Yes and no, I think. Unit. I bought an apartment that I'm in now, and it probably, you know, if I had my time again, obviously I think getting a house first would have probably been a better option in the long run. But you know, the rental market down here is really strong. It rents really well. I've never had any dramas with it, and it's actually a place where I love living at the moment. So it ticks a lot of boxes. I think, you know, financially, probably maybe a house would have been, you know, maybe a little bit better, but in terms of everything else, I'm really happy with it. And I think it's, you know, it's pretty low maintenance, and it's going to be something that I think hold on for a while.
Sounds like a plan. Now, Matt, I've certainly got some more questions for you after the break. We're just going to take a quick minute, but we'll be right back with some more deep diving questions. One sec.
If you're after personal financial advice, don't get it from a podcast. If you would like help based on your own personal situation, head over to sortyourmoneyout.com, click Get Help, and we'd be happy to introduce you to one of our trusted advisors. We also have a panel of trusted mortgage brokers we can connect you with to get you into your first home, an investment property purchase, or to review your current loan if you don't have a broker. Our panel of advisors, mortgage brokers, and accountants work with clients all over Australia so they can connect with you wherever you are. That's sortyourmoneyout.com and click Get Help.
Now, Matt, with the nature of your profession, obviously there's contracts involved, so you might only be with a team for a certain period of time or locked in for a certain period of time. And I guess there's also other industries that can be the case too, where people are professional at what they do, but they're on a 1, 2, or 3 year contract. What I'm keen to unpack is the relevance of that towards lending, because some people may struggle, or, you know, banks might look at it differently when you are going contract to contract. Are you able to shed any light on how that was assessed? Did it impact you at all, like the structure of your profession in going forth for a loan?
To be honest, I don't think it really did in terms of the way I did it. I got my loan when I still had 2 years to run on my contract. So yeah, I think that definitely helped me. But I do know some of the boys that have been off contract or have only got 1 year to go that have struggled with lending because they don't have anything after the year was finished. So, it's definitely, you know, not even, you know, the lending side of it's difficult, but even just the lifestyle of not knowing your future can be a difficult one, especially when you sort of sign a 1 year deal. I haven't signed anything over a 2 year deal. That's sort of the longest deal I've signed. So yeah, it's good and bad. I think, you know, I don't mind moving around too much. You get to experience different places and everything, but you know, there's obviously some negatives as well when lending's as part of that.
Yeah, and it's a really critical one is thinking about your own situation at the time and whether it's coming to the end of your contract or just starting a new one, or it's planning to have a baby where you might be reducing one income, or you're going to take a pay cut because you're going to a job that's maybe more enjoyable for you, whatever the case may be. You really need to think longer term, don't you, and just see how this is going to play out, because especially in the example of maybe dropping one wage to then have children, it might be another 3 or 4 years before you get back into a position where you're as financial as you are right now. So it's really important to play that out. But yeah, just moving on from that aside, sounds though you're doing something you love and you're extremely passionate about it. Have you ever got to a period in your life where you thought, okay, I'm loving this, but this instability of the nature of what we're doing has overcome me, and I need to move on? Or has it all been pretty rosy for you?
No, I've definitely had those moments. I think it's pretty common, especially for players in my position, where you know, I'm probably more on the fringe than an established auto player on massive money. So you always got that in the back of your mind that, you know, you're always chasing your next deal. You're not Nothing's really guaranteed. So, I've taken a lot of, I suppose, it's probably taken me a while to get to a headspace where I am comfortable with the position I'm in, and knowing that that's just part of the gig. I think early on, when you're young, really young, and you start getting that first exposure of NRL, you want to, obviously sign the big deals and do all that sort of stuff, which, I still want to do. But, I think having, some perspective about how lucky we are to play and to do what I love is just sort of gets me through it, and also having a backup plan with some study and all that sort of stuff to make sure that, whenever I do retire from the game, or if there's no contract or whatever it is through injury or whatever, I've got something ready to go. So that's definitely helped me get through those times of instability and not knowing what's next.
I think that's a really good way to look at it. And I know, industry aside, there are quite a few people that tune in, or even in the wider My Millennial Money community, who do grapple sometimes with the idea of they're really happy where they are in their job, but it might not be the highest salary that they could attain, or they really love the culture and that's what's keeping them somewhere. So I guess more generally, do you have any advice for people who are sort of competing between, I guess, being in a happy place culture-wise and doing what they love versus looking at the attainable income?
Yeah, I think obviously everyone's a little bit different. I know my circumstance, I suppose I'm lucky because the nature of the job, the incomes are quite good probably compared to someone that's doing a passion project or something and earning, not much money at all, but loving what they do. So I suppose I'm lucky in that sense where I've got the best of both worlds to an extent. But, I think enjoying what you do in general for anyone is more important than, the financial side of things, as long as you can provide for yourself and your family. I think that's what I sort of, I'm going to try to live my career by and my life by, and I think that's the general sort of consensus for everyone.
Yeah, it's an interesting point, isn't it? And we've had Kate Campbell and Brianna Throssell on the main show that have just come back from Tokyo swimming, and they've both got very different stories in terms of pay scales in their sport, and generally speaking, professional sports people aren't paid massive amounts of money unless their particular sport's got the big TV deals. So it is that passion versus finances, and some people just throw their hands in the air and say, look, I've had enough of this. As much as I love it, I've got to move on because I want to start a family, etc., etc. But Matt, you're 27 now, I think Wikipedia serves me correctly. What's your plan post NRL? Because we don't see too many 40-year-old NRL players rolling around. So what's your plan from a vocational point of view, and also from an investment point of view?
Yeah, that's right. Obviously, you can't play forever, especially. And the NRL is pretty, being a contact sport, it takes the out of you. And I think, if you get to 30, 31, 32, you've done better than most. So the one thing the NRL, and especially here at the Raiders, do a really good job at, they put a lot of emphasis on some study and getting some work done before you transition. So I've done a few courses here and there. I've done my certificate 3, certificate 4 in personal training. I've done sort of the standard one that a lot of the boys do. But I've also last year during COVID, when we had our sort of 3 months off, I signed up to do a diploma in mortgage broking and finance, and I was able to nut it out and finish it in 3 months, which was good. Obviously, I wasn't doing anything at home, so I've got that under my belt now, and I've done a little bit of work experience with my mortgage broker who's helped me before, and that's been really good as well. So I think that's a space where I definitely want to get into post footy, whenever that may be. And as I said, it's just it's good to have a plan, and something I'm actually really enjoy and a passion of mine. And whenever I do get into it, hopefully I've still got a few years left in me, and I can transition into it and make a career out of broking.
Sounds like a good plan to me, and sounds like your skills will be put to good use, you know. I think it's there's not too many professions where you kind of know that there's going to be an end date at some point. It can't be forever. So great to have a plan in place. And I think having plans more generally for, you know, listeners, whether it be through property, through finance, through your career, having a plan in place is a really good thing to have. Matt, it's really been a pleasure to learn more about you and learn more about your journey. I'm sure listeners have taken little bits of wisdom from you today in sharing your journey. Is there anything you wanted to close off with, anything you wanted to share at all?
No, I don't think so. I think, I suppose being a property podcast, I think, as give you guys a plug and My Millennial Money a plug, you know, listening to all the podcasts, I think, you know, even the other ones, Property Couch, and you know, things like all those sort of resources that, you know, have helped me massively in terms of, you know, widening my knowledge base and getting a bit more confident with it, because you know, I'm not much of a reader. I don't really like reading books, but I listen to podcasts all day. So, you know, I think the more you can learn, the more confident you can get. And once you have that knowledge, and you know, you can get a lot more confident into pulling the trigger and being able to get on the property ladder. And I think that's probably the purpose of this podcast, is to help people do that. And it's definitely helped me, and I think it's going to help a lot of other people as well.
Very good, Matt. Yeah, thank you for coming on, and thank you for sharing your story, because I think, as Emily said, a lot of people get some inspiration from you out there today, because it's not always a straightforward road. We're not always paid a consistent income, and whilst you might have had some bonuses along the way by playing well, which is obviously great because you're living your passion, you know it's not going to last forever, and you're putting some plans in place now for the future, which is awesome. So any chance of getting back into the family business, or is that horse bolted?
I don't think so, mate. I think that horse is bolted. I think that was one of mum and dad's thing. They always wanted us to chase our own passions, and all us kids have done that. So you know, it's been awesome. You know, third generation family business, but I think I'll stick to kicking the footy around for a little bit longer and see where that can take me.
Very good. All right. Well, all the best for the Raiders for 2022 as well. And as always, thanks everyone for tuning in. If you like what you hear, give us a nice rating. If you don't, that's fine as well. Give us some productive feedback so we can always look to improve what we're doing. But until next time, enjoy your day.
We acknowledge the Darkin Young people, traditional custodians of the land on which our studio sits, and pay respect to their elders, past and present. We extend that respect to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples who may listen to our podcast.
Taking your property journey to the next level starts with education.
That's why we make this podcast, but we've also created online courses to equip you with the knowledge you need to take the next steps.
I've created the Solvair Online Academy, open to both first home buyers and seasoned investors, where I share my tips and experience from 20 years in the property space.
And I've created the Buying Coach, built from my experience as a buyer's advocate, to demystify the confusion around purchasing property, particularly for first home buyers.
Follow the links in the show notes to sign up and get started today.
This podcast is for education and entertainment purposes. Any advice is general financial advice only, which does not take into account your objectives, financial situation, or needs. Because of that, you should consider if the advice is appropriate to you and your needs before acting on the information. If you do choose to buy a financial product, read the product disclosure statement and obtain appropriate financial advice tailored to your needs. Simo Interactive Proprietary Limited, the publisher of the podcast, is an authorised representative of Money Sherpa Proprietary Limited, which holds financial services license 451289.